Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode is presented by Meta.
A virtual reality platform created by Fundamental VR and Orbis International helps train doctors to treat cataracts, resulting in more confident surgeons operating worldwide. Meta and the metaverse are having impact today.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Politico's Davos Confidential, our pop-up podcast coming to you directly from the World Economic Forum in Davos, which is extra snowy this year. In fact, it's been a snowmageddon. People have had real problems even getting here. I'm Ryan Heath, the author of the Brussels Playbook column, and I'm speaking to you from the Intercontinental Hotel in Davos, where our executive editor, Matthew Kaminsky, and I have just been addressing a really eclectic group of people, from CEOs of shipping companies to change makers that are really changing vocational education through smartphones, and people who used to work in the White House, a real interesting mix of people, just like our podcast today. We have two interviews in today's show with Arantxa Gonzalez, Executive Director of the International Trade Center, and Brett Solomon, a leading advocate for digital rights. But first, back at the Congress Center of the World Economic Forum, I spoke to Florian Ader, author of Politico's Morgan Europa column and my co-author this week of the Daily Davos Playbook. Hi, Florian.
Hi, Ryan. Glad I finally reached you. It was quite a trek today from our apartment to the Congress Center here where we are right now.
Did you take the shuttle or did you walk?
No, I walked. Indeed, I walked.
Right. Well, yeah. It took me more than 30 minutes to get here. It was less than 2 kilometers. So to give you a bit of context, we're here in a glass-walled studio overlooking the main staircase in the Congress Center. So if you hear a bit of background noise, that's people bumping and moving and networking behind us. And all I've got to say is the bits where I was walking here, I was slipping and sliding everywhere. So if you are physically coming to Davos, bring some serious boots, get some extra grips, and that's our best advice to you. Now, we're about to kick off the forum officially, Florian. What's your first impressions?
I just wanted to add that, you know, you think a car might be handy in this town, but dream on. I was passing by a very, very long queue, several hundred meters that I walked along. So there's additional difficulties this year in Davos getting around.
But indeed.
Apart from that, it still has been a little bit quiet today. I just met a colleague, a journalist from the Swiss television, who was desperately looking for a CEO to interview, or at least any C-suite person.
He couldn't find anyone.
And he couldn't find anyone, obviously. Then he asked me. I couldn't help him either.
And you're our chief executive in our heart. You're the chief executive of hearts here at Politico. Well, better than the Wall Street Journal folks. They got stuck in a gondola this afternoon. So they clearly were enjoying a little bit of the skiing before everything got underway.
I think never had such an idea, right? No.
Well, there was actually an avalanche warning, and I was going to turn to Trump because we think it's going to be a bit of a Trump avalanche this week, but there was a real avalanche warning this morning, and some police had to be evacuated from where they were stationed. But let's turn to that somewhat inevitable avalanche, President Trump. John Harris, Politico's global editor-in-chief, is running a session on Tuesday on post-establishment politics at 12:30 if you want to tune in on the World Economic Forum website. What do you expect from that session, Florian?
I think that session is pretty much what the big theme of Davos is about. Of course, we journalists ask, could it at the end be Trump's Davos, or Merkel's Davos, the European Davos, the Indian Davos? But there's more to the question of who's up and who's down in this week here at this Alpine gathering. There is a real fight on the global stage between attackers and defenders, or rejectionists and reformers of the old world order, the centrist consensus that was built around that supported
places like Davos. That's exactly what Davos was for.
Voila. So it supported globalization until, you know, a few years ago, let's say. It was fraying, and it shattered altogether in the Brexit and Trump vote. So the question that we're going to address tomorrow, we're going to explore that fight. John and his guests are exploring that fight and look at the question that's behind, that's being asked in actually many government headquarters in all corners of the world. Is there a new middle ground on the contentious issue, say, on trade, on immigration? Is there a middle ground that accepts limits to open borders but still rejects nativism? So that's the question that John's going to address tomorrow, and I'm very much looking forward to sit into that panel and listen.
Absolutely. Well, I think Emmanuel Macron shows that there is some possibility that you can shape that kind of radical center in some way. He is one of the leaders who has been arranging meetings with President Trump. What's the situation with other EU leaders? I mean, I find it a bit frustrating that it gets down to, like, did we get FaceTime with President Trump? But obviously it's something they all want if they want to dissuade him from a trade war, if Theresa May wants to get that Brexit trade deal from 2019 onwards. So what's the state of play there?
Actually, there's, you know, Theresa May desperately wants that meeting. Others would probably like to have one, but are not desperate for getting it. So I guess the most interesting question to look at this week is, or one of the interesting questions on that level is whether or not Theresa May is going to have her tête-à-tête with Donald Trump. That will particularly play out badly for her if Macron got a one-on-one meeting and she wouldn't. So,
but she's got the tapestry, Florian. She's got the tapestry.
Indeed.
We'll be back with Florian for more Davos gossip later. But now, let's get started with our first guest, Arantxa Gonzalez, one of the world's leading trade experts. I started by asking her why she comes to Davos each year.
Well, officially, because I co-chair the WEF Council on the Future of International Trade and Investment. But also because I think we have to keep on making the point that international cooperation on trade is very important, that international trade requires global rules, that it requires global engagement, and that if we do it, everybody is going to be better off, that there is no way we can open trade in a more effective manner and adjudicate trade in a more effective manner if we go it alone. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm making the point that would be dear to many in the Davos crowd, the value of international cooperation and engagement, although these days it's not to be taken for granted, because there is another part of the Davos crowd that may be more sympathetic to going it alone, maybe going unilateral, maybe...
Could that person be called Donald Trump by any chance?
No, I don't think, I mean, I don't want to finger point, because, I mean, I think there is like two different visions in this World Economic Forum about sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's at the heart of this discussion.
So what can we do, either within the World Trade Organization or through other measures? The EU has been working hard to try and reshape its trade defense instruments, mm-hmm. to look at the behavior of China, for example. What could we do to make people feel more secure about the rules of the game in trade, so that you didn't have a populist backlash or you didn't see the whole system crash down?
Well, I think we have to distribute better the benefits and the costs of international trade opening. That's what we have to do. And thus is a big part of where the backlash is taking place today. It's called inequalities. And by the way, we talk a lot about inequalities, and we're going to hear a lot about inequalities in Davos, but we are not doing enough. And that's what's causing the backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all of this crystallizes in international trade, which is the visible part of globalization. It's the treaties that countries put to parliaments. But there is much more than that. There is technology.
Mm-hmm.
There is much more than that. There is the labor market.
Yep.
There is more than that. Taxation. There is more than that. Skills. So all of this is what we have to discuss to make people feel that the growth that comes with trade opening is being fairly distributed.
Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say you probably have to split it into two categories? It's how you open up trade and what's in the agreements, but isn't it also the domestic policies? So, for example, reskilling workers, how you distribute the wealth that trade might create. It's not really one or the other, is it?
Absolutely right. We have to deal with the two. we've got to do more inclusive trade policies. We have to look at the kind of trade policies that respond to today's needs, and we have to go beyond what we've been doing in the last 40 years, which is mostly tariffs, and look at behind the border measures, regulatory measures, standards, prudential rules, because that's where the efficiencies of opening will come from. But at the same time, we cannot stop there. And too often we've stopped there. We also now need more robust what happens after I sign the trade agreement policies. Mm-hmm. We need to be much more careful about education. It's going to be the key to mm-hmm. empower the youth to take the opportunities that come with the digital economy. We've got to rethink social safety nets. It's not just how much we spend on social policies, but how we spend on social policies. Mm-hmm. This is a huge discussion, and if we don't do that, we will have a backlash on opening, on open markets, and frankly, on open societies.
Well, here's a thought bubble that really just occurred to me right now, where I worked in digital for a number of years, mm-hmm. and what became clear is that it was connected to everything. You couldn't treat it as its own separate issue because the political consequences, the economic consequences, they were everywhere. I have a feeling trade is the same. Where tech is experiencing a backlash, trade is experiencing a backlash. So maybe it just means that you have to consider it through all policy.
Well, trade has been facing a backlash for quite a while. The novelty is that tech is now facing a backlash. And I think the source of this backlash is the same. It's not enough to just simply open and sit down and wait for the consequences. You've got to regulate. You need to understand, especially in tech now, we need to understand if we make information accessible, what kind of information are we making accessible? To whom are we making it accessible? How we do make sure that the information we are conveying is not pure lies? So all of this is coming back to haunt us, and that's where we need to think in terms of how we are going to regulate all this opening. What kinds of rules of the game do we need to make it palatable to all, not just to the 1%, to the 99% too? It's very striking when you read Oxfam's report released here at Davos, how much wealth is concentrating on very few hands. And that's what's causing the backlash. And this is where business also has a huge role to play in that discussion.
Arantxa Gonzalez, thank you very much for joining us on Davos Confidential.
My pleasure.
Now it's time for our second guest, Brett Solomon, who proves it's not all about trade at Davos. He's the head of an NGO called Access Now.
So Access Now is an international human rights organization. We essentially sit at the intersection of human rights and new technology. So we do a range of policy work, tech, advocacy, trying to bring the human rights agenda to all of these tech issues. But I'm here because, well, I was invited to sit on a couple of panels. And I think that whilst you have all of these, you know, incredibly important people with, you know, from government, from companies, etc., it's essential to have a civil society voice here and to have human rights perspectives and initiatives being inserted into those discussions, because otherwise, whilst all of these big decisions and discussions are happening, if it's just a corporate and government engagement, then citizens, people around the world, users of the internet, 4 billion of us, soon to be 8 billion, lose out.
And you've picked the right time, because digital is just really rising up everyone's political agenda,
yeah.
Whether it's threats around cyber attacks, whether it's the fact that you can't grow your economy these days unless everyone is connected.
Right.
And you're about to head up to speak to Klaus Schwab, the forum organizer,
yeah.
I hear. What's your message to him?
Well, I mean, I have a few things to say. I think the issue around cybersecurity is absolutely central. And in fact, the 2018 Global Risk Report that just came out this week from the World Economic Forum identified that cybersecurity, cyber attacks are the number one issue on the risk agenda, which is extraordinary. We've been saying this as civil society actors for years. So I think making sure that as the cybersecurity agenda is being built, we have cyber commands all around the world being established by governments, and you know, corporate policies, etc., that you actually build a rights-respecting cybersecurity framework, mm-hmm. that it involves civil society actors, and that it's also systemic, because what's happening now is the decisions that are being made are generational, and it's absolutely essential that the right to freedom of expression, to opinion, to association and privacy are protected. That's my key message to Klaus.
And one of the things that we don't talk about so much here at the forum, because it's pitched very much as a big positive space for engagement, mm-hmm. but there's, you know, I would say there's quite a few dodgy regimes and actors that also come along to have discussions here.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in particular on a sort of your target list or your hit list of someone who's really doing
Donald
the
Trump
wrong thing?
Donald Trump is coming, and I don't know how you want to frame that.
You tell me.
I don't know how you want but obviously that comes with a range of different issues, from cybersecurity to net neutrality, which was just overturned in the US and hopefully will be re-overturned by the US Congress. Issues around mass surveillance. The US government, last week, the Congress just passed a reauthorization of Section 702, which basically gives the US government the authority to, without a warrant, monitor and surveil the communications of every single person outside of America.
Yeah, well, they've appointed that right to themselves.
They've given that right to themselves.
I'm not sure anyone gave them that permission.
They reauthorized that, and they also expanded that capacity. So I think, obviously, the US government being here is something that is extremely important and needs to be spoken to. Truth to power.
Absolutely. There's actually right behind us, right behind your shoulders where we're recording this podcast, there's an immersive cyber attack experience, and it's essentially narrated by NSA whistleblowers, actually.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's quite a bold move to have that sort of message at a forum when there are so many US delegates here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the reasons why I'm here, and we discussed this amongst our team and amongst our community. In fact, I wrote to our whole community of 200,000 people around the world and said, what should I say? And so I have this agenda, which is the cybersecurity one on internet shutdowns and on national biometric ID. And I want to use the opportunity to speak to people who we wouldn't normally get to speak to, obviously. So, as you say, heads of state from governments and also from democratic states and non-democratic states, and CEOs of companies and so on. So I think there's a real opportunity, but it's essential for me that we also stay true to the human rights community. You know, even though we're in the context of all of this, like, inverted commas, power, that we use the voices of users at risk and we bring them into these decision-making platforms, as I say, because otherwise it just becomes a corporate government cabal and you end up with the user and the citizen losing out.
Absolutely. Well, more power to you.
Thank
a sparkling water on me later in the week then. No champagne for us. And good luck with your meetings.
Thank you so much.
Now it's time to let you in on a Davos horror story. Now, this town and this forum is known as being glamorous and impossibly elitist. But for many people, actually, it's just a high-class school camp. It's full of endless little social hierarchies and humiliations. And the best one we've come across so far is a middle management guy here. He was coming to Davos to guide his CEO around, one of the early arrivals, and he booked himself into an Airbnb studio. Cost €450 a night. That's the good bit, folks. On arrival at Davos Station, his host told him he'd be staying illegally in said studio, then proceeded to ask him if he had a girlfriend. Weird, but, manageable. Then it turns out that the host was staying in the next room, barged in on our source 5 times in the first hour of checking in, and the source had to run away very quickly into an Uber. Now, Florian, being Davos, that Uber was a Tesla X, the one with the Batman doors that open up vertically. And you won't be surprised to learn that it cost €45 to go 4 kilometres. But the story did have a happy ending. After putting out an SOS alert for a bed, another one of this guy's contacts had a colleague who was ill and skipping Davos. So our friend got a full refund by Airbnb. He loved that. And a free hotel in Davos. So that's a little Alpine miracle out of that horror story. Now, what about some parties and experiences?
Shall we move on to parties?
Let's do it.
Every day has a night in Davos, of course. Monday was Ukraine night. Tuesday will be Thailand night.
Woohoo, I love Thai food.
Yeah, the range from sad to near bribery in terms of the gifts and the booze on offer is, of course, something that you'll experience yourself.
We don't take any bribes here at Politico. You're going to have to give us more than a glass of champagne to get anything out of us. Now, any old organization can throw on a little party with a glass of champagne in some cramped hotel, but actually what caught my eye so far at the forum are the artistic and the technological experiences. There's some really great art around the place. And my pick today was a 360-degree immersive cyber attack documentary. It's called Zero Day, and it was about the Stuxnet attack that sought to disable Iran's nuclear program. And the content was just amazing. Like, it's really well done. But I didn't want to focus on that. What I really took away was going through that experience, I just thought, how much could virtual reality revolutionize the way school learning takes place? How students could understand issues so much better than words on a page if they could have those sort of experiences. And that might be years away, but I really saw that clear potential, and that gave me a little smile on my face here today in Davos. So on that note, thank you for listening to the latest episode of Davos Confidential. If you want to register for our Davos playbook, go to register.politico.eu/Davos playbook, and we'd be very happy to give you our insider's guide to what's really going on up the mountain that's a bit more elaborate than this podcast. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.